Hello, everybody, and welcome to Fly in the Lab. My name is Maria, and I am a scientist, PhD student, science communicator, and host of this podcast. Fly in the Lab is a place so we can all chat and laugh about our science confessions and lab mishaps. A place so we can dispel myths about scientists and really share some of the humour that gets us through the day-to-day struggles, of which there are many. Thank you so much for joining me, and I hope you enjoy listening to Fly in the Lab. Hello, and welcome back to Fly in the Lab. It's me, Maria. Welcome back. If this is your first time listening, welcome. This is a space where we talk about all of the myths and all of the confessions behind science, scientists, and everything that goes on in the lab behind closed doors. Thank you so much for joining me. It's been a really nice couple of weeks. You know, I'm in a little bit of a lull in my lab work at the minute, so I'm doing a lot of writing and trying to just kind of get my head around how I want to structure my thesis. And I think I mentioned this in the last episode, I'm kind of just really trying to get my head down and get some words on paper to make myself feel better and pray that I kind of get everything finished in time, because my contract finishes in January of 2023, so I've got just under a year left to go. It's all battle stations at the minute, trying to sort everything out, but it's going okay. I'm enjoying it still, just trying to kind of keep my head above water, and I'm getting involved in some really exciting kind of science engagement and communication things at the minute, which I can't really talk about on here just yet because I'm still figuring out the details for them all. But you know, we're getting there. And that's something that's happened this week. I reached 10,000 followers on my Instagram. Me clapping. It happened at like midnight on, I'm recording this on Tuesday, and it happened on Saturday night. And I was at my boyfriend's house. I just had girls' night. I was a couple of bottles of wine in, I'm not going to lie. And I was just crying hysterically and screaming, because I was just like, I can't believe this. This is absolutely insane. So if you do follow me on Instagram at a bioblog, thank you so much for all of your support thus far. I really do appreciate you sticking around to hear me both complaining and talking praise about science. It can be a difficult road sometimes, and boy do I let you all know it, but I do really appreciate all of your support, and thank you for joining me on this journey that I seem to find myself on. So yeah, I think we'll stop there with the mush and we'll get into the episode. This is such a funny episode. I really enjoyed speaking to this particular lady, and yeah, I just really hope you enjoy it as much as I did. So without further ado, let's get into the episode. So hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Fly in the Lab. I am joined today by the fabulous, well-known, Instagram famous, now new doctor, yay, Molly, welcome to the podcast. Do you want to introduce yourself, tell us who you are, where you're from, a little bit about yourself and your background?
Yeah, so hi everyone, and thanks for having me. So I am now Dr. Molly Williams. I just finished my PhD, handed in my hard bound today, which was on environmental DNA, so detecting particularly fish from a freshwater environment using the genetic material left behind. I basically looked at developing a new method for this, which worked-ish. And that's kind of like the overall process of my PhD. I live in Dublin, but I'm originally from the UK, as you can probably tell from my accent. So I've just did my PhD in Dublin, but did my undergrad and my master's in the UK. And then I guess outside of my job, because I am more than just that, I do lots of things like dance and do aerial hoop and everything like that. And yeah, I'm delighted to be here. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. Oh, when you said about your aerial hoop there, like, I've seen obviously your post online about that, and it looks amazing. Like every time thank I see you. It, I'm like, you are so talented. I don't think I could
honestly
do that.
I mean, only the best ones. You should see all the videos of me like hitting myself with the hoop, or like not successfully actually getting into the hoop, which happens quite often.
How did you get into that then? Was it like something that you did during your undergrad, or in fact, like, so what did you do your undergrad and your master's in? Does that, I'll ask that as well as the aerial hoop question.
So my undergrad was biological sciences at Warwick University, and then my master's was forensic science at King's College London. And I actually didn't do hoop until I started in the pandemic, which was a really bad time to start because classes were so hit and miss, like whether they were on or not. But I basically had a few friends who do it back home, and they were always posting their videos and everything. And I was like, yeah, I'll try. Like, I got given a taster session for aerial silks, which is the like two silks.
Oh, with the,
Yeah, so I did that as a taster session. I got given it as like a Christmas present.
Nice.
I was rubbish, but like quite enjoyed it. Mm. And I was like, oh, I'll try hoop because I figure you have something to sit in. So it's like easier.
A bit more stable. I mean. Yeah.
I'm like, once you can get in, you can kind of sit on something and that makes it way easier. So I just did a taster and just really liked it and was like, yeah, I'll keep doing this. It's painful, but it's good fun.
Yeah, it does look good fun. And I think it's important that you said there as well at the start, like you're not just kind of your job and you're not just now your completed PhD. You know, it's nice to hear. I love it when people come on and like talk about other things as well, because I think it is really important. And you've advocated for this online as well about kind of doing things outside of your PhD and your job and showing that, you know, it's not the be all end all. And I think that is really important. So I think that's great that you do that.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, I see the culture that's talked about a lot in academia, and even saw it in some of my colleagues and stuff. And we've spoken about it, like I've spoken about it to them. And I was always like, no, I don't want to be one of those people who stays in all night and works weekends and stuff. Like, yeah, every now and again, you might have to. You might have a time course experiment or something that you can't just leave at five, whatever. But I was like, even studying, I remember people thinking I was really weird, but even studying for exams and stuff, I didn't revise after dinner. I was like, nope, I can't work in the evening, so I'm not going to. And I've tried to keep that mentality throughout my PhD. And there's no reason not to. Like, if you use your time, I'm not saying people who work long hours don't use their time wisely, but if you use your time wisely, I do think you have enough time to get a PhD done. And most of the time we're trying to do too much work anyway, and we actually don't need to do half of what we do. So like, I think like you can do it, you just have to advocate for yourself and be like, this is where I'm drawing my line and I'm gonna be a person outside of this. So
100%, I definitely agree with that, and I think it's really refreshing to hear that you think that as well, because often I feel like I'm in the minority of people who think that, because I'm exactly the same. Like, I try and do everything in between kind of like 9 and 6, and then once I get home and I have my dinner, I'm exactly the same. Like, unless there's something urgent, unless I have like a deadline, there's absolutely no way that I'm going on my laptop and I'm not doing any work. And for me, it's not even that I can't work on a night, because I can. If I put my mind to it, I absolutely can. It's more that I know that if I do, I'll have really bad burnout later, and it catches up with me so quickly. Like, even if I have a couple of late nights a week, then the next week I'm like absolutely exhausted. And I don't know if you've ever found this in the past, but I feel like if I push myself too much, then I start to lose the love of it. And I think that's kind of what happened to me before Christmas, because I was so busy and I hadn't taken a break in so long. And then it kind of got to Christmas and I was like, I actually feel disgusting at this point. Like, I just didn't want to go in. I didn't want to do the work. And I mean, obviously I was, because like, I still have a job to do, but I wasn't enjoying it as much. And then taking that time away over January, I felt like really rejuvenated me. And then when I came back, it'll be last week now, I just felt so much better. And I felt like, it's almost like I fell in love with it again. Like, I don't know if that's, is that weird? I don't know. Have you ever felt like that?
I don't think it is. Honestly, I feel like if you keep pushing yourself too hard, it becomes like a chore.
Yeah, and exactly. Yeah.
Like 100%. Because you're, as you said, you were like, I'm still going in because I have to, kind of thing, rather than actually because you want to do the experiments. And like, there's going to be waves of that anyway, I think. Like, I definitely had periods, like after my transfer report, which is like your progress report, in mine was second year,
right?
After that, I was just like, no motivation, didn't want to do anything.
Yeah,
kind of didn't do a lot, to be honest. And then went back in and suddenly like I was designing new experiments again and actually getting excited, because I love science, like genuinely love doing experiments, love getting results. Yes, there's times where it's a pain, but there's nothing more exciting than when you troubleshoot something and it works, right? Like,
yeah,
do I know 100%. From talking to you before about like QPCR and stuff, it's like,
yeah,
you might still hate it, but when you get a graph that's like perfect, it's so satisfying.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
And you do lose that, I think, if you overwork yourself, because
definitely
even the highs just kind of go, because it's like, oh, it's just, you're on to the next thing.
Exactly. You don't like take a break and savor that really good thing happening. And I think, especially with the nature of science, a lot of the time, there's always going to be something else that you can do. So you could easily work like 18 hours a day, because there's always going to be something extra that you can do, or the next thing that you could be starting. And you're right, it's all about kind of drawing that line in the sand. Do you feel like you did that throughout all of your PhD then? Or do you feel like that's something that you kind of learned as you went on? Or...
I'd say I was quite strict from the start.
Yeah, good for you.
Even just, yeah, as I said, that's like what I was like in undergrad and stuff, even revising. But I definitely know some of my colleagues who weren't like that and have now realised that they weren't productive. It actually wasn't a good mindset to have that, and work way better now, and I'm much happier and everything.
That's good.
Which it's really nice to kind of see that even in other people. But yeah, I'd say I was pretty good from the start. I think that's one thing I'm quite proud of myself. I'm like, yeah, I've always just been like, no.
Did you feel like you got pressure from other people though? Did you feel like either people sort of sneered at you, or even kind of people who were maybe a little bit senior to you? Did they ever kind of say, like, tackle you about it almost, or did they kind of leave you alone because you were so kind of definite about it?
Yeah, I think I wasn't too bad. There was definitely times where you'd leave early or whatever, and you'd be like, is everyone judging me because I'm going home? And it's not to say, like, I would do a lot of my thinking in the evening. So right, yeah. I've, in my head, I'm like, I've switched off from work. My partner would probably tell you otherwise. the amount of times, like, even when I was writing my thesis, like my final chapter, which was the overall discussion, I was so stressed about, and I just had no ideas. And I was like, I don't know what goes into this. I don't know how you write it. And it was probably, I think we were watching a film or something at like 8 o'clock on a Friday. And I was like, I've got it. And I just whacked out my notebook and I like, just planned the whole chapter.
Oh, I love it.
So it's not that I don't work in the evenings, but like I try not to. And I think I was lucky that I didn't really have that pressure. And I'd say, especially obviously with the pandemic and stuff, people aren't around and you're encouraged to work from home. So I think that's made a better culture of people leaving when they're done.
I agree.
They might continue working from home on the computer or whatever, but rather than just hanging around and not actually doing anything, or just, as you said, there's always, like, we're in research, so there's always experiments to do, there's always more you can do, and it's just, you'll find that this year as well. I'd say you have to reach a point where you're like, this is all I'm doing, full stop.
Because
it's really like you're going to constantly open new questions. That's the point of what you're doing.
Yeah,
but it's realizing, okay, this is enough, this is all I need, and having those conversations with your supervisors.
I was gonna say like finding out as well, almost like what is enough for the PhD. And I think that's itself a little bit of a difficult question, because everybody has such different perspectives. Like what I think might be different to what my supervisor thinks, which might be different to like your supervisor, which might be different to you. And it's, I feel like sometimes you can find yourself in like an ever revolving rabbit hole of what everybody else is saying.
But, yeah, you literally just have to be like, no, me and my supervisor decided.
Yeah.
And I basically sent her an email and was like, I think this is all I need to do. This is my outline for my thesis. This is what will go into each section. And just actively was like, is this enough? Because, and some of my last experiments looking back at were slightly dodgy. Even now I'm like, not dodgy, but like, I don't know, probably needed to be repeated or a bit more kind of exploration into the data.
Yeah.
But I was just like, no, I want to finish.
So. Yeah.
But there's just always... talk about it.
Well, yeah, like, I was going to say, yeah, if anybody asks you about it in the Viva, then, you know, you can say, well, that would be if I was continuing, if I did have some extra funding, that's what I do. Yeah. And you never know, you might get the option to do that.
Who knows? Exactly. So you have to like, you have to draw those lines yourself. And
yeah, I think, I think that's a really important thing to note. And I think I'm pleased that you've said that, because I do think that is, again, a very important message. And thankfully, I didn't even plan this. It segments really well into the poll of the week that I picked out for us. So the poll that I picked was, do you feel guilty about taking time off from work? So yes or no, do you want to have a guess of what way it swung and maybe have a little bit of a guess at the percentages?
I'm going to go with it swung towards yes, because I think people, and knowing your followers and stuff on Instagram, I think there'd be a real guilt culture for that.
Yeah.
I reckon it's probably more shocking than I would like it to be, towards yes, like even in the high 60s, 70s.
Okay. Well, you're a little bit too high, but okay, yeah, you're sort of logical.
That's good.
Right.
I'm glad it's not that bad.
Yeah,
because
I'm sort of firmly in the no camp. And I'm like, absolutely not. Like, if I need to take time off, I'll take time off.
Yes.
But it was 59% yes, 41% no. So 60-40, if we say.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, it's not too bad. But you're right. I think that is relevant to kind of who follows who.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people who follow me are either doing a PhD or are kind of like doing a master's or like an undergrad. So
yeah, some sort of academic pathway.
Yeah, so it makes sense, I suppose. But I'm assuming you're kind of in the no camp as well.
Yeah, I'm in the no camp. I don't think I've ever felt guilty about taking time off.
I sometimes feel a bit awkward asking for it, as in like emailing my supervisor and being like, oh, is it okay if I take this week off? Or rather being like, oh, I'm gonna take this week off. But then I feel like I have to justify why, and I'm like, oh, because I'm gonna like do this, and I'm thinking, yeah, I actually don't need to say that, like I can just say I'm gonna take this day off.
Okay, I do get that. I'm pretty sure I've always said because I'm doing this, or even like my parents came out and I was like, because my parents are coming out to visit me in Ireland for the first time in 4 years, like,
yeah,
they don't need that much information. So I would justify it, but I wouldn't feel guilty about doing it.
That's fair.
But I definitely know people who would.
I was going to say, yeah, I know people who would. And equally, I understand people who would, because I think everybody's supervisors are different and expect different things. And I have had experiences in the past with supervisors who have not been as supportive of leave. So I do understand it. But I think, again, it's a case of like knowing where you stand and drawing your line in the sand and being like, no, this is my like absolute. So
yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So obviously this podcast is about sharing confessions and mishaps that might have happened to you either in like the lab, during your PhD or during your degree. So this is the portion where you can offload a little bit. And if there's anything that's like really weighing you down that you'd like to share with the group, then this is your time to shine. So do you have anything that you would like to share?
So I was actually thinking about this one, right? Because I don't think I've done anything crazy.
Everyone always like, says this.
No, I don't think I have. Like, there's been things that have happened. There's a story I'll tell in a second. It wasn't me, something I did, but
okay,
yeah, I was like, I've got the perfect story for something that happened in my lab. But the only thing I think, like, I know in my first year, I think, of my PhD, I accidentally labeled so I work on salmon and trout, and they're really closely related. And I did some like recombinant clones for them. So basically took a bit of the genome from salmon and trout and put it into a bacterial plasmid. And the whole way through, I was doing all my analysis, was like, yeah, it's going really, really well. And went to test it on tissue and it didn't work. And I was like, but it works really well on the clones. Didn't know why, went back to it, was like, okay, I'll blast my sequence. Turns out the whole way through, so this is about half my first lab book, I had the two sequences wrong the whole way through. Like, I'd labeled them the wrong way around. And just hadn't blasted it. Like, had gone and shown my supervisor all this data, was like, look, it works really well. And then when I tried it on tissue, obviously it didn't work because I didn't have the species right. Luckily figured it out, but it does mean I feel really bad if anyone comes in and tries to copy my lab book, because I basically have a page halfway through that is like, everything before this is wrong. Like, it's right, but everything that says trout is actually salmon, and everything that says salmon is actually trout. And I'm yet to go through my like box from that year that's in the freezer, because I'm like,
oh,
do I know what to throw away?
Oh god, that's gonna be so confusing.
Yeah, So it's just like the simplest mistake, right? It was just when I was designing the sequences, whatever sequence I downloaded first, I labeled wrong. So my reference sequence was wrong. And therefore designed everything off that. So it was just proper, like, I don't know.
When you got to the end of it, did you just have to like, so you'd done all the work, so did you then just have to switch them?
Yeah, so that essay actually didn't end up working anyway. So fine. I got to go back and redesign it. But I did have like, and I'm hoping, but that essay did make it into my thesis, and I'm hoping I have them the right way around in there.
Oh, I mean, God.
It could be part of it.
Don't say that.
No one has noticed, and it's now submitted. So, and that's, none of that data is published, so it's fine. But yeah, that was fun.
Oh, bless you. Easy mistake to make, though, I think, especially early on.
Oh, but the panic was the worst. Like, I was like, I remember telling my friend, how do I tell my supervisor that I just labeled it?
That is the worst thing. Like, making the mistake, you feel awful because you know that you're like, you've wasted your time. But the worst part of it is having to tell your supervisor. And I absolutely stand by that. Like, anytime I've ever had to tell my supervisor that I've done something wrong, I could honestly cry beforehand. I'm like fully like talking to myself, like, it's going to be fine. She's not going to be angry. But it's more like the image that they then have of you. Like, I don't want her to think that I'm a failure.
Yeah, you're just like, this is such a silly mistake. But like, I don't know, I got so wound up about saying anything, even though obviously my supervisor was just like, it happens. Like, don't worry. But yeah, it was stressful. Yeah, so I think that's the worst thing I've done, though. Like, other than making labs pretty smelly, every lab I seem to go in, that sounded way worse.
Salmon and trout.
Yeah, and I did an experiment that, again, first year, which we called the salmon lump experiment, where I basically, because I was extracting DNA from water, I was like, okay, how can I do like a mock version of this? Which now, honestly, I think back to myself, I'm like, whose stupid idea was this? So I cut up salmon tissue, put it into like 5 liters of water.
Okay.
Just put it on like a rotating block, left it overnight to like mush up into the water. But obviously this is like really concentrated because I've literally just chucked a lump of salmon tissue in. And the smell was horrendous. Like, and then tried to filter it. And obviously I wasn't extracting from the water because all the tissue just got like clumped in the filter. And just, I remember the other PhD students coming to the lab and being like, what are you doing? Because it's a molecular biology lab as well. Like, we are not used to having random lumps of salmon.
I was going
to
say like a bit
clogging
big
up the sink. it was pretty Megan.
Remind me not to work with you.
To be fair, it's not as bad as my master's where I had to digest mussels to try and get microplastics from them, but in like hydrogen peroxide. That was worse. That was pretty horrendous.
You must have a strong stomach. I don't know how I could fare with that.
Yeah, I just, again, that was quite a non-smelly lab, and there was me just, everyone was like, what are you doing? Yeah, that was pretty gross. I'd actually forgotten about that. That was pretty minging.
That's absolutely grim. I won't lie to you. Do you eat salmon now? Like, can you eat it? Yeah. Or
I don't care.
Good for you. Oh, no, I don't think I could.
No, it was, wasn't the best. Wasn't the best.
I hope there's people listening to this who've worked with you and they're like, yeah, Molly was really stinky. Like, anywhere she went, it just absolutely hummed.
I hope not. Like, that would not be good.
Oh, no. Oh,
they'll be glad to see the back of me.
Oh, but I do think, like, especially, like, it's good, though. Like, for all, like, I know you made, like, this horrendous, unfilterable pulp.
Which is just stupid. You know, doesn't resemble the environment in the slightest.
But, it's good that, like, you were thinking about it and, like, thinking on your own two feet and trying to figure out a way that you could replicate that. Yeah. So, you know. And
if you want to go down that route, we'll try and give first year Molly some credit. But
I am. I think that she needs a little bit. She needs a little bit. but the good confessions. I like them. They're a little bit different as well. I don't think anybody's ever said anything like that before. Very niche.
The only other one that I was going to say, this is it's one of my favorite stories that happened, as I said, not to me.
Okay, so this isn't to you.
this wasn't me. It's a bit, yeah. There was a postdoc in our lab who was a bit, I shouldn't have even said out loud because now everybody knows who and exactly who I'm talking about. Let's hope this person never listens. But who was a bit interesting, shall we say,
okay,
from the start. You know, when you
an
just
interesting
get an impression.
Character.
Yeah, you get an impression of someone, not to judge, but you're like, okay, I'm not sure.
Mm.
And the project they were working on was like genome editing of mammalian cells, and it was like they're working with antibiotic free media because of doing the knockouts and stuff. You just don't want to risk your antibiotics affecting the like profiling and stuff that you're going to do afterwards, because obviously they can affect mitochondria and stuff, right?
Yeah.
As you'd know very well with your mitochondria expertise. But they were doing this project, and loads of one of my fellow PhD students saw like antibiotics left out on the side, like in the cell culture suite, and it was like, okay, but we're not using that. And then I can't remember, but at least two other PhD students, I think, got contamination in all their cells and were like, right, okay, but the postdoc didn't have anything. All been in the same incubator, all been like exactly the same. It was like, mm-hmm, how do they not have any contamination at all? Then was doing contamination tests, and we were all already a bit like, huh? This doesn't make sense. Did the contamination test, which is like a PCR effectively.
Right.
So you're looking for, I think it's two bands they look for on the gel.
Yeah.
Well, you don't want two bands. Two bands indicates contamination, but I think one is like fine. And the same postdoc presented at meeting, like, nope, don't have any contamination. Here's my PCR results. And again, all the others had contamination. So we're like, maybe we're just rubbish, or like, this doesn't really make sense.
Mm.
So went to the gel doc, like in the lab.
Okay.
And I mean, this is a bit sneaky, but like onto the postdocs folder, and all the images were there.
Stop it.
And clicked on the image, and there was clear two bands contamination on the image that was on the gel doc. So we're pretty sure someone has a PhD in Photoshop.
Oh my God.
Basically edited out all the bands, and to make it look perfectly clear, and had given these samples to someone else to then do analysis with. Like, it wasn't even like, uh-huh, it was just their own work it was affecting. They'd literally passed on those samples to someone else, who then got really dodgy results and was like, I don't know why, who was doing mitochondrial research, and whose results were really dodgy.
Oh my God.
And yeah, it turns out it was contaminated the whole time, and the postdoc had been using antibiotics. So yeah, safe to say, left the lab.
Colour me stunned. I'm actually, right? Like, almost speechless.
Because I wasn't like directly involved in that project, so I wasn't affected at all.
Yeah.
I just remember the gossip was like,
that's scandalous.
I'd be in like the clean room and everything, and I just remember my like friend coming and knocking on the door being like, look what we have found.
That's like, insane.
And it was in first year as well, so we were proper like, you know, your first year PhD, you wouldn't kind of talk back to your postdocs or anything. Whereas now I would just be like, what are you doing? Whereas back then we were like, nope, quiet. Oh. And it was just, yeah.
As if.
Right.
That's unreal.
I'm like, how'd you get to that level?
That's like borderline,
be photoshopping
like,
your
strike offable offence though, really. Because like, that's scientific integrity out of the window.
Yeah. And even though it probably, like, it wasn't like published or anything like that, but you're like, if you're claiming to not be doing these things,
yeah,
and your results, like, you can't have contamination in cells and no, believe your results.
No.
Like, you just, unless, I don't know, unless you're doing co-culture, and that's what you wanted, but that's not
insane.
What they were doing. Right.
As yeah, if, I'm so pleased that you shared that. I didn't know where that was going. Halfway through, I was like, where are you going with this story? Like, what was he doing to those cells? Like, what was he doing? And then when you said, as soon as you said about how you'd gone and looked at the images, I knew. I straight away was like, yeah, I know that's
mental. imagine just being like, I don't know, running a PCR and having, even if you just had like contamination in your negative,
yeah,
and just being like, oh, just get rid of that band.
You can't. It's happened to me before, like when there's been a band there, and it is frustrating. You're like, oh, like, I know that it's fine. It's like a tiny little band so far up that it's like, you know, but you can't move on with it. Just,
I also just wouldn't, like, even myself, you're just like, oh, I can't trust those results. Even if you no, did like you to couldn't. Show someone yeah. else, even if you were like, no, I want them to think it's fine, which is wrong, but like even if that yourself, you're like, how could you continue trusting any of that data? You'd just be like, well, no, it was just contaminated. Like, I'm the person who, even with everything clear, I'm like, mate, like the amount of times I'd go to my supervisor, I'm like, but what if salmon's not there and it's all just contamination? And she's like, well, were all your blanks clear? Yes, still could be contamination. Like, I don't trust anything. So
no, you can't. It's that would keep me awake at night. I'd never be able to sleep again.
Ridiculous. Oh, right,
jeez. I mean, I'm looking at like the confessions that I've picked out for you now, and I'm like, these are pathetic compared to that story.
It's not even to be fair, I'm glad that's not my confession. Imagine me sitting here being like, oh, I photoshopped all my data.
Yeah, you know. I'm really looking forward to my Viber.
Yeah.
Oh, that's amazing. Thank you for sharing that. Oh,
that's okay. Okay. It's quite cathartic sharing that story. To
that's
be honest.
Great. Yeah. So, I've got two confessions for us.
Okay.
The first one, actually sort of related, because talking about gels that you would run after a PCR. So this is the first one. During my master's degree, so MSc, I was very new in the lab and poked my finger in a gel to see if it had solidified. My finger went straight through, which spoiled my friend's work that she'd been working on for weeks. I was so scared of her reaction, and I was justified too. She had to repeat the experiments and was so angry with me that we didn't speak at all for a few days.
Wow.
I mean, I'm going to start off by saying, absolutely right on, I would take your head clean off your shoulders.
Why were you... Well, I don't get, like... I've stuck my finger in a gel.
Why
someone else's gel? Why do you care if someone else's is? Although, how did it ruin it? Because surely you just re-pour a gel. It's not the end of the world.
I'm guessing it had solidified and he was just too... He, like, poked his finger through.
And, like, maybe it already had samples or something in it.
Maybe. I don't know.
If it was just, a solidified gel, like, it's not the end of the world.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I guess it depends on the type of gel, because some gels are like
fancy, I guess if it's one of these
gradient gels or something,
yeah, or the ones that they use for like Western blots or something,
yeah,
that would be a pain. I should have asked but I didn't,
like an agro's gel,
yeah,
it takes 2 seconds to repour, so I don't think that's worth not
it must it have been I was gonna or... say it must have been that the samples were already loaded, yeah. And maybe the friend had like stepped out or something, and I don't really know, but oh, honestly,
I just can't imagine going to someone else's gel, just full stop.
Oh no. It's more like if I had been working on something for weeks and weeks and weeks, and then somebody came in and ruined it like that.
Yeah.
I probably wouldn't speak to them for a few days, more because I'd be scared that I would say something really horrible. I'd be like, no, I'm not talking to you for like your own good, because I'll say something mean and you'll cry.
Yeah. I don't know. I think it depends on the circumstance. But yeah, you're right. If it, like, based on the end is, like, they'd clearly spoil something.
Mm.
I'm just intrigued to see why they were sticking their finger in someone else's gel.
Yeah, I should have asked that. Like, I'll have to ask and then I'll follow that up. Yeah. With you. But I feel like...
Why'd you care if someone else's gel set?
Yeah, as long as, like, he said sorry and was like... I write my bad, then I could obviously get over it, but I'd still would be a bit miffed, and like, you're right, I'd be like, well, why were you touching my gel in the first place? Unless, I wonder if like he needed the gel apparatus or something. Maybe there was like, you know, like the, what are those things called, that like they're like the plastic,
the combs,
yeah, maybe he needed like one of them or something. And although no, because that wouldn't have been in, I don't know, I have a lot of unanswered questions here.
There's so many variables.
I know.
It's like, what stage was it in?
But I feel like
gel... you're right. It must have been solidified already, because otherwise it wouldn't have been a problem, right?
Because I've definitely done that a fair few times where I put my finger in, it's been liquidy.
It's a great way to test your gel. I've also done it a few times where it's been almost too set and then it kind of leaves a dent and then you're like, ah. But you also, you always poke away from where you load your samples.
Yeah, then, sort of like on the very edge.
Yeah, then it doesn't matter as much.
Yeah.
there's an SOP for poking your gel.
Yeah, well, I mean, I've never like done that, but my thing is more less like it's on the acidified side. It's that I'm too impatient and I take the combs and the wells out and it just sort of goes and like splodges everywhere and I'm just sort of stood there looking at it like, oh, okay. Especially if it's like a really low percentage gel and there's not much powder in and it just sort of disintegrates into nothing and you're like, okay.
The amount of gels like that just, that's just a whole field in itself. The amount of times you forget to add the stain or like I'd be making a big gel and you'd use a small like flask and you just melt all over the microwave.
Spitting everywhere, then you've got to go back in and clean it all. And
or you just leave it and you'll be like, yeah, this will be fine, I'll just run and do something, and you come back and you're just like, well, that gel was just everywhere.
Or on the flip side, when you get to the end and you think that like you're done with your experiment, and for me, I always like, because I really like ripping it, I love the sensation of like ripping the gel. But then I have maybe once or twice got to the end and just automatically done that. And then I'm like, oh my God, no, I needed to do an extraction. And I've just like ripped it in two.
That would be so frustrating.
Yeah.
Has it been like when you've had loads of DNA to just rerun it or RNA or whatever you're using?
It's been a case of like, I've had to kind of like start from scratch and like do the whole PCR from scratch.
Yeah, because I guess normally if you're doing an like gel extraction, you use your whole PCR product, don't you?
Especially with flies, because flies are like, sometimes they don't get loads, so
yeah, that would be a pain. I don't think I've ever done that. I think I did leave a gel on. Was this me? Maybe this wasn't me. I might pick this up. I suddenly thought of something in my undergrad research lab. I'm pretty sure I forgot about a gel and went home and it had like overheated and all the buffer had evaporated off. It all like dried out.
Overnight gels make me very nervous.
I wasn't meant to be running it overnight. I'd gone home. It was like just a standard PCR. Probably not even that long. Like it was genotyping. So it wouldn't have been maximum like 600 base pairs or something. And I'm pretty sure I just left it on.
Easy done. We've all done it.
Yeah, they weren't impressed though.
It
was one of those communal stations as well that was like used by like loads of different lab groups. It wasn't like it was just mine. So
I tend to use my own just in case I do that, and then I've only got myself to shout at.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think that's too bad though.
Yeah,
I like that person off. I'd forgive them.
I was gonna say you're more forgiving than me. I would also forgive them. I'd just be a little bit angry first.
Yeah, I probably would be like, not to their face, because I'm one of them. Like, that makes me sound really two-faced, but I feel I'd bitch about it at home and then get over it.
Yeah,
that would be me.
That's what partners are for.
Yeah, right.
Oh, so there you go, there's our verdict for that. We would forgive you, but also a bit of a slap on the hand for doing it in the first place.
100%.
Okay, so confession number two. Now, this is actually quite a nice one. I like this one. So when I was a master's student, I also did some lab demonstrating on the side. I was nearing the end of my master's and looking for jobs, and there was an internship as a technician at the uni that I was at. I knew the technicians from the lab from demonstrating, so I was on my best behaviour trying to impress them. One practical, I was left on my own, and dropped a full bottle of Leishman stain on the floor. The lid came off and it properly jetted up onto my face and coat. I rushed to clean it and it took a full bottle of alcohol to clean the blue puddle up, which you can still see in the lab to this day. Another demonstrator told me that I didn't have any on my face, so I was talking to the technicians saying, please still consider me for this internship. And they were saying, don't worry, don't worry. It was only after the interview that I went to the toilet and I had blue dots stained all over my face. Happy days, though. I got the job in the end.
That's brilliant.
Isn't it?
That's proper, like, I don't know. You can imagine that in like a lab, a film with some sort of lab where that would happen.
Like, yeah, you drop it and it just whooshes into your face.
And that a moment afterwards where you're like, oh, I had this. It's like, I don't know, if you have makeup smudged or something and no one tells you, and then you go to the bathroom. Like, but the fact she asked and her friend didn't tell her.
I know, especially like in an interview, I'd be like, you need to like tell me the truth. Yeah. Like, is there anything on my face right now? But
yeah, why would you? I'd be annoyed at them.
Yeah. But I mean, it's good that like they didn't judge you for it, because it's not a representation of like how good you are at a job, because I think everybody can be clumsy. I mean, we've all dropped stuff before, and like, goodness knows we all smashed stuff. I dropped, what was it that I dropped? It'll be about a year, maybe about a year and a half ago, maybe about a year ago now. And I pushed over, as I was doing some like practice QPCR runs, an entire vial of like cyber green. And I was just like, no.
Did it actually all come out?
All of it. Or like at least three quarters of it. I had like nothing left in it. And I was just like, it's the price of it. I feel like if you're in like another lab like that, like they're obviously going to use stains like that all the time, so it's not going to like break the bank. But if you break something that has like an antibody in or something like that, it's the money. It's not the fact that you've just smashed it.
No, 100%. And that I didn't like, that has really changed for me when I was suddenly aware of science cost, right? Because undergrad, master's, you're so like detached from that.
Yeah, you
you're
don't
just
have
like,
a claim.
Oh, this is fun, I'll just use this. Like, we had undergrad in our lab in, again, my first year, who broke a pipette, and we just bought a new set of pipettes, broke it, just put it in the bin, didn't tell anyone, just went and got a new one. And we only realized because it was in our ethidium bromide area, so we had like very set pipettes that were all labeled.
Right.
And then the one she'd taken in wasn't, so we were like, who's bringing pipettes in? And again, fine. It happens, like you break things, but A, tell people, like tell the people in the lab that you broke it. They're not going to be angry, like it's fine. And also, just, I don't know, like I then as a PhD student was suddenly like, pipettes cost €250 or whatever for like a standard one. I know that's nothing for science, but it's a lot of money. Like,
no,
just...
it is. And I think it all adds up so quickly. Like, as you say, like a lot of PhD students do their own ordering. So like I order everything that I'm going to use from like, as you say, pipettes to tips to all of my consumables and chemicals.
Like gloves. Yeah.
And it's horrifying how expensive it all is. Like, I can kick the backside out of like $4,000 in one day for one set of experiments that will last me for like 2 weeks. Horrifying, awful. And I just think, oh, and then of course with the dreaded C word that we won't mention, everything's like back ordered and everything's taking ages, and you just think, oh no, it's all,
but I don't like
breath.
I think it's so, you're so not aware of it. And even like I remember in first year we used to get quotes from different companies for like gloves. Because we were like, oh no, we have to get the cheapest. Like, we can't spend €7 euro when you could spend €6.50.
Yeah.
We were so, like, I don't know, so on it. And then got to, like, third year, and my supervisor was just like, oh, by the way, there's, like, €16,000 left in the budget, €30,000 left in the budget. Like, you want to spend it? And we were just like, but we thought we had really small budgets. But what we think of as a really small budget compared to what, like, a scientist thinks of a really small budget. We are scientists, but like a supervisor.
No, I know what you mean.
It's just it's like mind blowing.
I know.
Someone wants to give me $3 million to do some research.
Do you feel like you're kind of being even more exposed to it now? Because I know, like before we started recording this, you've just handed in your thesis, and you said like you're starting to kind of look at the next steps, and you mentioned that you're sort of filling in job applications, but you said you'd also applied for a grant. Is that the type of grant where you've had to kind of itemize exactly where you would spend that money and kind of like what on, or is that kind of like a later stage of the grant process?
Yeah, so there was budget in it, but it wasn't, thankfully it wasn't that detailed. Like it was more, I think I just split it into like, I think it was $12,000 a year or something you got. And it was like, I'll need $2,000 for sequencing experiments, $2,000 for travel,
right,
and then like
so
the rest on consumables out. Kind of not specific, but there was a few like items that I had to put in, so it was like for that specific grant we need to buy a new bit of equipment and stuff, and you have to list that.
Right.
but it does, yeah, towards the end of my project, I had to do an estimate of like how much I'm going to spend on the rest of my project, because you want to try and use all the money, basically. Otherwise you don't get the same amount in future years. So I kind of realized it a bit then, when you were suddenly like, oh yeah, this,
it's a fine balancing act to try is, and
because you don't want to run out of money. That would be like the worst nightmare. But yeah, I think the budgets often are overestimated anyway, so we probably have way more money than we think. But then I know some people don't. I guess it depends on your funding. It depends on everything. Yeah. Like, it's so varied, isn't it?
And how many people you've got in your group, if you want to bring anybody else in. And I suppose this is where a lot of the uncertainty comes for postdocs, why their contracts are often so short, because there's no guarantee that you'll get more grant money at the end of it to kind of like renew their contracts. It's fun, isn't it? It's fun being a scientist.
It's really fun. And I'd recommend everyone go into it. There's so much certainty, and it's so like reassuring every day.
Molly's 100% not saying that with like tears falling down her face.
No, to be fair, I would recommend it. Like, lots of people go into it because I genuinely really enjoyed it. It's only now that I'm like freaking out, but
you'll be fine though. You'll definitely land on your feet, and you know, you'll find something that is a good fit, and I'm sure you'll be absolutely fine in the long run. It's just,
fingers crossed,
the waiting game now that you've got to get through.
That's fine.
Yeah.
But
yeah, so those are the two confessions that I had for today. To kind of like wrap up, is there anything that you'd like to share with the podcast listeners? So if you want to kind of like promote anywhere where people can find you, as with many of my guests, we met on Instagram. So, you know, if you want to like talk about that, or if you want to point them in the direction of any publications, or if there's anybody listening to this who's reading Molly's application for a job.
So hire me. Yeah. To be fair, I put like Psycom as a big thing because I was like, it's one of the things that makes people stand out. So I was like, I'm going to put that I do Psycom. So yeah, in terms of my Psycom, I guess I'm on Instagram. What's my handle? @_Dr_Molly. Which I don't like as much as Almost Dr. Molly, but it was a satisfying transition, to be fair, just getting rid of Almost.
Yeah, I get that.
But it doesn't have the same ring to it. So we'll see how long I last with that. This podcast might not age well. And then I'm also on Twitter, which is WilliamsMolly_9.
I will pop all of this in the description.
If anyone wants to follow me on there. And yeah, I have two papers, but they're quite boring. So probably, unless you're in environmental DNA, if you're in environmental DNA or CRISPR-Cas diagnostics, like a buzzword, hit me up. I can talk to you about that because I do love to, like, my next plan for Instagram is to do a like real series on my research, because I think it's really nice, like yourself doing the mitochondrial series, and is it Beth that does the brain stuff?
Yes.
And I think it's so cool, like people talking science in a reel. So I want to hop on that because it's just, so snatchy and fun. So hopefully
definitely
I'll do that and people can hear more about my research.
Brilliant. Yeah, I think, I mean, I would obviously recommend that people do check you out on Instagram because, you know, a lot of your posts are so informative, and I think what you do is actually quite unusual as well. Like, it's not kind of, I say like mainstream with like quoted commas, but like it is quite different. And I think that's nice. And it does make you stand out because it's a little bit unusual. And I think it's nice to kind of learn more about that. And like, I feel like I've learned more about it just from like talking to you tonight. Yeah. And yet I like do follow you on Instagram and I do like,
the whole like what we were saying earlier about burning out, I definitely did that on Instagram. I went like full guns blazing, posted loads of things right at the start when I had like, it's not all about followers, but when I had very few people actually viewing any of the content. And then just hit a point where I was like, oh, I've used all of my ideas. So now I'm kind of like, okay, actually now I've built a bit of a following. I actually like spoken to more people, and there's a few people now, like even a few environmental DNA people, like I've spoken to a few people who are just starting out and stuff, so I'm like, or just people who are interested in it, because the methods I've used and developed don't have to be applied to what I've applied them to. So I think it's cool to like start talking about them again, and now I don't have a thesis to write or a PhD to defend, I'm like, yes, now's the time to
definitely get back on it. I think it ebbs and flows anyway, you know, because I've had definitely periods of that where like I post every now and again and then I'll not post for ages because I'm like so busy with other things. So I think that's like just natural, but I think it's great that, you know, you've got these plans, and obviously I'm biased because I do enjoy a good reel, but I think it'll be really good. And I think it is always nice to talk about your research. Like I always get a little buzz out of it, sort of talking about stuff that I feel like I know about, because I don't know, it's just nice, isn't it? You get like that warm, fuzzy feeling. You're like, yeah, like, this is my topic.
It's one of the reasons most of us who are in SciComm want to get into SciComm. Actually, like all the other stuff, I think is really important to talk about, like PhD life and tips and tricks for writing and everything like that. But I'd say a lot of us want to do what we do because we want to talk about our science and we want to communicate that.
Massively,
And it's almost remembering that and just being like unapologetically just like, you know what, I'm going to bombard you with science content now, and you might lose some followers, but who cares? Like,
yeah,
that's what we want to talk about at the end of the day. So
yeah, definitely. And I think a lot of us in that space are doing a good job at that and are really getting across that message, which is great. And you know, it's nice to see people doing it in such creative ways. Like some of them that I see, I'm just like, oh my god, that's like amazing. Like a lot of the people who do like infographics, I just think that's apps, like the graphics on that are beautiful. I just don't have the time to dedicate to that, but I admire the people who do it.
Yeah, no, 100%.
Oh, that's great. But no, apart from that, I'd like to obviously thank you very much for joining me on the podcast this week. I've really enjoyed having you on and like actually having a face-to-face conversation.
Yeah, it's so nice.
It's so bizarre. Like I feel like I know you really well and yet we've never actually spoken face-to-face.
It's so, the world of social media is so bizarre for that, isn't that? Because it's like, yeah, I feel like I know you, but as you said, never actually had a conversation.
I know.
Yeah, but thanks for having me on anyway. It's been good. And those confessions weren't too bad. I feel like the people who handed them in can like, forgive yourselves, they were fine.
yeah see that, there's the verdict. They were fine They weren't too bad. They were quite nice. But and thank you again for sharing yours, and thank you for coming on. It's been great.
Yes, thank you.
And there you have it. That was my episode with the lovely Molly. I really hope you enjoyed that. I honestly have laughed so much editing that audio. It was brilliant to relive the conversation that we had, and Molly is so lovely, so I definitely recommend you checking her out. I will put all of her information in the description box. And yeah, thank you so much for joining me and Molly this week, and I really hope you enjoyed this episode. Please, if you feel like it, consider giving us a like and a rating on whatever podcast station, whatever you would call it, that you're listening to this on. Consider maybe even subscribing so that you don't miss another episode in future. My episodes are fortnightly. And yeah, if you have anything that you'd like to confess, please do get in touch with the podcast. I'm always on the lookout for guests, so get in touch if you'd like to feature as well. And other than that, I will let you go and I will see you in 2 weeks' time. Have a lovely couple of weeks and I will see you again very soon. Speak to you later. Bye.